Running a call center sales team is definitely filled with challenges, but at the same time, can be very rewarding. There is no manual for how to win the call center sales game, which is why this podcast exists. As your guide, our goal is to help you overcome challenges, discover new tools, innovate where possible, and hear stories from others who have made it to the top of the call center mountain. Welcome to the Scalable Call Center Sales Podcast with your host, Jason Cutter.
I have said this for a long time, that I think sales is not actually a true profession, in quotes, like others, like doctors, lawyers. I mean, even electricians and plumbers are more of a profession, meaning they have to study, they have to take courses, they have to pass a test. There's regulations, there's standards, there's consequences for going against the rules or the oaths or the requirements. Sales doesn't have that as a group. There's no education requirement as an industry before starting to sell to people. There's no entrance exam. There's no governing body. When I started in sales, I didn't even need to be licensed for mortgages in Washington State, let alone had any idea what I was doing in selling. For people who sell insurance or financial products, yes, they have to take testing and they have to get certified in those products, but how they sell it, what they say, there's some compliance, but otherwise sales is up to them. And that's why I truly think that sales, the word sales and selling has such a bad meaning, because there's no one keeping track of people. There's no one holding anybody accountable. Customers end up dealing with salespeople and have an experience that's usually not great. Now, what I love, and the reason why I'm saying this is a big intro before we get to my guest today, which again, I'm super excited about, is that the trend in recent times is a movement towards professionalizing the world of sales in the different ways that it can be done, and fragmented attempts kind of working on it. There's college programs, there's independent, organizations doing it. And one of the things that's great, and my guest is from Oregon State University, is that they actually have a professional sales program and a sales academy. So my guest today, her name is Caitlin Gill, and she is with Oregon State University's Sales Academy. She is the director of the academy and a professor in the College of Business. And in her dual role, she's bringing with her all of her experience in sales and business to prepare the next generation of sales professionals and sales leaders at the university. And she comes from a background in software sales, engineering, going through acquisitions, tech career, so many things. And it's basically bringing that into the world of sales and helping the future generation. And I think this is really one of the first steps for helping the industry as a whole, the more of these things. So Caitlin, with that long intro, welcome to the Scalable Call Center Sales Podcast.
Thank you, Jason. I'm so excited to be here. I love your podcast. I love the work that you do. And I certainly appreciate your dedication to professionalizing the sales profession and also kind of bringing up the next generation of sales leaders. So I know it's something you're really passionate about, and I'm excited to be here today.
Yes. Well, and I appreciate that. And yes, like I said in the intro, that I made you sit through, but I'm just so excited because I think that's just such a big gap, right? People, it's like the Wild West out there where people just do and say whatever they want with only a marginal amount of accountability. And it just leaves a trail behind it of so much bad stuff, or the potential for bad stuff. So let's talk about this program, because a lot of people, like when I was writing my book, in fact, I was like, wrote a chapter in there and I was like, there is no programs to teach people how to sell. And then through editing, I was like, oh, wait a second. There's some programs that help people. Like, there's still no professional like governing body, but there's actually programs, courses. How did this one come about at Oregon State? And then how did you get involved? What does that process look like where the university said, let's engage and help future salespeople?
Yeah, that's a great question. So honestly, I was under the same assumption as you when I was in the software world. I was like, well, I never got trained at university. I went through a undergraduate program. I went through a master's. I actually did take a sales class in my master's program. So I went to University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill and Kenyon Flagler Flagler Business School offers a sales class. So that was the first formal sales class I had taken, but this is after I'd been in software sales for 15 years. So a little bit different because you had a lot of professionals, right, that are coming to the table with some sales knowledge, but there were absolutely no basic sales classes, professional or personal selling classes when I was an undergrad. So the fact that there were sales programs was news to me. And the reason I found out about this was because I was connected through a colleague to Oregon State College of Business, who said to me one day when I was working in tech, "Have you ever thought about teaching at a university?" And I was like, "No, not really. I was very, very happy with the company I worked for. It was a company called Insight Software. Not really looking for a change." But then I honestly pondered that question. I was like, "Wait a second. Are you talking about teaching sales for undergraduates at a university? That's really a thing?" And so she's like, "Yeah, that's really a thing. So they are looking for someone to teach personal and professional selling at Oregon State." And I was like, "Oh, that's really interesting. If I were to leave my software job and go to university, I could actually teach and train young people how to sell to prepare them for this incredible and amazing career in sales and get them excited about it, to alleviate a lot of folks floundering around for those couple of years after graduation," which I know you are very familiar with, and then finding their way into this amazing profession, 5 years down the road. So yeah, it was really interesting coming into the program to teach. And as I came in to teach, at Oregon State, they had kind of started, I would say, incubating this idea for a sales academy. And it was more than an idea. They had it. They had a sales competition that they ran the spring before I came. And they said, "We've got this idea for a sales academy. We've run the sales competition. And we think that this could really kind of pick up and do something," because there were a lot of students that were interested. So the summer that I came on board is really when we started to put together the pieces to develop a true academy or sales training center for students, any student in the university that was interested in sales education. So in the College of Business, you can take sales classes. I teach a personal and professional selling class. But the Sales Academy is a separate academy from that. So any student at OSU can come on board to Sales Academy. Does not cost them a dime. And they go through a 30-hour sales training program that teaches them the fundamentals of personal and professional selling. The reason it does not cost them a dime is because we have some incredible sponsors that back our program. And so I, if you don't mind, would love to give a shout out to them. So we have incredible sponsors like Pacific Office Automation, American International Forest Products, Aflac, Gallo, Pape Materials Handling, Beacon Hill, Insight Global, the Partners Group, Paycom, Tech Systems, and Skyalytics that sponsor our program and allow us to offer this sales training and certificate for students at OSU. Long answer. But that's kind of how it started. Was we realized that there was a need. And then we developed a program that we were able to offer to any student at OSU that is interested in sales education. And now we've had, at this point, over 200 students that have kind of been in the program in the past 2 years. And I can talk more about what the program actually is, but I'm going to take a breath and see if that answered your question.
Yeah, that is great. And while you catch your breath, I think the fact that there's sponsors willing to support that, just as a way to help with the future, whether those future salespeople go to work for them or not, but just putting in those efforts. Like, that's why I'm super happy for you to share that list of companies who care about the future generation. I had a conversation with somebody earlier today, and we were talking about the churn and burn mode, and where you can tell like that comes from the top down versus companies caring about their people and wanting to help them improve, and then outside in the world as well. So I love that. One of the big things too, and I don't fully understand this, I haven't seen one of these yet, but it seems fascinating to me, which is this idea of sales competitions. Can you talk a little bit about that? And then, how that prepares people? Because essentially what you're talking about is what college age people or people in college competing against other groups, right?
Correct. Yeah, absolutely correct. So that is a part of our sales academy. And you can kind of think of it like putting the skills into practice. So in academia, we talk a lot about learning outcomes, right? So our whole goal in building classes and building syllabuses is for students to achieve these learning outcomes by the end of the course. And so with Sales Academy, we have certain learning outcomes as well. And so the way the program is structured is there's a certain amount of learning that they do remotely through our Canvas online learning platform. And so that allows us to have any student participate in Sales Academy, whether they're eCampus, whether they're on campus, whether in Corvallis, or whether they're in Cascades, because we are in Corvallis, Oregon, but we do have three campuses that we serve, one of them being completely remote. And so a part of joining Sales Academy is they have a certain amount of kind of foundational training that they do. So this is the basics of the sales process. And then once they have all that knowledge, well, what are you going to do with it, right? So we have to test them on this in some way. I'm not a big fan of written tests. I'm not a big fan of like Scantrons or anything like that, especially in sales. The way I'm going to test them is I need you to sell something, right? So what we do is we hold three competitions a year. So that was a big thing with Sales Academy. And what I wanted, my goals for the Sales Academy were to be able to provide students the ability to put their skills into action that they were learning. So we hold three competitions a year at OSU. We have an elevator pitch competition, which is actually going on right now. So some people say the elevator pitch is dead. I disagree for students that are going out and interviewing, because they need to be able to pitch not only themselves, but if they end up, let's say, working for a company, and I know you work a lot with call centers and a lot of students doing insight, or a lot of professionals doing insight selling. You have to be able to, in 60 seconds, catch somebody on the phone and make them stay on that phone with you, right? So we're training them how to do this in the Sales Academy through this elevator pitch competition. So we give them different prompts every year. Some of them are personal prompts, so sell yourself. Some of them are professional prompts, sell this product. Some of them are service-related prompts, sell this service. Our prompt this year is they are operating as consultants for the National Institute of Health, and they're selling equity, diversity, and inclusion training to sales organizations. So we have had some excellent elevator pitches. But the idea behind this particular prompt at OSU, we have a strong focus on EDI, and we wanted students to explore what that would look like to sell a service and how important that service is to a sales organization. So that's just one of our competitions. In the winter, we do a role play competition, which means that students actually operate as salespeople. They have a product that they're selling. So Pacific Office Automation sponsors that competition. Last year, we did temperature scanning kiosks. And so their prompt was to sell a temperature scanning kiosks to the finance department in a university. So these would be implemented in the dining centers at universities. So they have to go through the whole sales process, researching the buyer, right? And building their really solid approach, doing excellent discovery, putting together a presentation based on the buyer's needs, handling objections, closing, and they have to do this all within a 15-minute time frame. So students will compete with buyers from our sponsor from our sponsor organizations. They'll compete against each other, and they'll go through three rounds of a sales competition, where the first round is getting the second meeting. The second round is actually presenting and closing. Then the third round is some sort of crazy twist that we think up, where they close, but then somebody backed out, and now they have to kind of backpedal and figure out how to solve the problem. And then lastly, the grand finale of all of these is in the spring, we're for the first time doing a case competition. So this is kind of building up from the elevator pitch to the role play competition to the case competition. The case competition is a sales challenge that a student needs to solve. So this could be a sales challenge on territory realignment, or introducing a new product to a technology stack, or the merging of two sales organizations. And so they're given kind of a sales challenge, and then they have to present that case back to our panel of judges more of a sales manager than a salesperson.
I love it. As I'm thinking about these different competitions, challenges, and also what I know that you're teaching them, just thinking about how that compares and how that prepares them for some real world scenarios, right? You can't cover everything, but you're covering some stuff. What is it that you see as the shifts in people's, in the student's mindset, which translates to what people think about sales anyway, when you're going through all this and you're talking about these things and you're preparing them for this sales role, competitions, the academy, whatnot, relative to maybe what they thought sales, I'm going to use air quotes here, what they thought sales was or what selling was prior to meeting the amazing Caitlin Gill and the Oregon State University program? Like, do you get that feedback or do you ask them in the beginning, like, what do you think sales is? And then you just blow their mind with what it actually is.
Yeah, no, we absolutely do. And when I start teaching in the fall, that's always the first class, you know, tell me how you feel about sales. Doesn't have to be positive. And I would say over 50% of my class is like, I will never work in sales. And I think I remember when you came and talked to my class, Jason, you had a similar mindset on sales based on your parents and some other things. So I have 50% of my students at least every year that are like, never, nope, not me, not going to work in sales. That is not for me. So we take that data, right, from the start, and we, just kind of put it in the back pocket. No, it's a judgment-free zone. And then we introduce, what do you think sales is, right? And the concept of, let's explore what a sales profession is. So I'll tell you what most students think sales is based on their experience. They think if you are in professional sales, you sell cars, you sell houses, or you sell cell phones, right? That's their experience of selling as a 20-year-old in college, right? So when we actually dive into that and look at what sales actually is, I'm like, okay, let's think about the companies that you want to work for, right? So let's think about our dream jobs. And then we always get the same, some of the same ones. I want to work for Tesla. I want to work for Nike. I want to work for, Google. I want to work for Apple, right? What do you want to do for that company, right? So we kind of dive down this rabbit hole of like, what type of work do you see yourself doing? And a lot of the kids in my class are marketing majors. And so when we can kind of draw that picture of what you see yourself doing, a lot of my students at the end of the day, they're like, well, you know, I'd really like to work in a client-facing role. Interesting. Client-facing roles. Who does those? Who is in a client-facing role at most organizations?
Right. Sales.
Right. Salespeople. Yeah. Right. The outwardly facing folks in a company are the salespeople. And so 9 times out of 10, I'm like, well, that's interesting. Have you ever looked into the dream company you want to work for and kind of analyzed those roles and looked at some of the job titles or the job descriptions, right? So maybe they're not necessarily called sales in the job description, because when was the last time you had looked at a job description and saw sales in the title? But sales is in every outward facing role, every kind of, I don't know, client-facing role is going to be a sales role, right? Every business executive, every C-level, not every, but I would say the majority of folks in the C-suite came through sales in some way, shape, or form, or would agree that sales is a part of what they do, right? So when we really kind of dive into what business-to-business sales looks like, or even business-to-consumer in some markets, then my students go, interesting. Okay. Maybe I'll be a little bit more interested, right? In what this class is all about. And so it's such a beautiful evolution to watch my students kind of go through discovering this amazing profession by the end of the course or the end of the sales academy, really kind of thinking, I think this is the right profession for me, right? And then I have students that go out into the world and get these amazing jobs and then email me. I actually had a student reach out to me on LinkedIn today. I'm not even kidding you today. And she wrote, and I will read it to you. Hi, Professor Gill. I never followed up to thank you for helping me prepare for my interview at the end of school last year. I ended up being offered a job, moved to Austin, Texas, just wrapped up my fourth month working in sales, and I love my job. Really couldn't have asked for a better start to my career. I figured this week would be a good one to extend my thanks for your help. Your class was the most valuable course I took at OSU, and I thought you should know. I hope you're doing well. So we have students that go out into the world and just crush it in sales, right? And they would have never known that this existed if universities didn't invest in sales programs. So going back to what we talked about originally and just the, I don't know, investment from university, from the university side, there are actually 159, universities that have, let me make sure I'm getting that right. I believe it's 159 universities that, have sales programs today. Isn't that crazy? Really crazy kind of phenomenon. But if you go to the best way to kind of get that information is through the Sales Education Foundation. So they really kind of give you a lot of data about colleges that have sales programs if anyone's interested. But that will tell you all of the universities that have sales programs. And again, this is out of thousands of universities in the US. So it's still, not, you know, comprehensive, and not every school has a sales program, but within their listing, okay, it's 158, not 159. So they have 158 US based sales programs and 18 international sales, professional sales programs. And you can go to the Sales Education Foundation and they'll tell you all about that and all about the programs and the competitions and what everybody's doing to kind of change the face of this profession.
Well, and I love the thought of what the journey you're taking people who, again, 50% of that class probably each year is saying, I'm not going to be in sales. I don't want to be in sales. They want to be in marketing, but not sales. Mm-hmm. Not realizing that A, sales doesn't have to be gross. B, there's a whole world of positions out there that aren't cars, houses, or cell phones, right? Mm-hmm. And that it's not something gross and it's valuable, and there's positions at all these companies versus what happened, you know, for a lot of people like myself, or people still happens, which is they're looking for a job, they're working at a company, and they end up in a sales role, right? And it's by accident instead of by choice. And then hopefully they learn it. Hopefully they understand it. Hopefully they get some good guidance. You know, there's a lot of hope in there. When you got started with this program, and over the time that you've been a part of the Sales Academy and the personal and professional sales program, what kind of challenges have you faced with the program, with the industry, with the students? Is there anything that comes to mind?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, you know, I think with academia and sales, there are always challenges. There are always hurdles, right? There's a reason, like you said, that, you know, for a long time, we still don't have the regulations. I mean, you and I have talked about this just when you came into my class and we talked about how there should be an ethical code for salespeople, right? I still think about that conversation. I still want that to happen, by the way. Mm-hmm. But I think that, you know, because those pieces are not there, there are always going to be people that don't believe that programs like this belong in academic settings, right? That believe that, you know, you shouldn't invest in as heavily in a program like a sales academy as you should invest in like a program in engineering or a program in accounting or a program in one of those regulated fields, right? But the crazy thing is, if you talk to employers, you kind of reach outside and you talk to companies and you ask them what their goals are, they want to hire salespeople, right? Mm-hmm. And so I see the demand kind of pushing in and knocking a lot of those walls down that have previously been up in academic settings where people say, oh, it's not worthy of having a major. Sales is not a worthy major or minor. There's not enough to study. BS on that is my opinion. There is so much to study. There is so much sales research that's being done. You could create an entire degree program, as many, many colleges have, on professional sales, major and a minor. And those students are going to go out and change the world. They will revolutionize the way selling is done, and they will be the biggest. They will be the biggest kind of game changers in companies, because they not only understand the fundamentals of business, but they understand how to grow businesses, right? They understand how to be sales leaders. So we're not just teaching them how to be individual contributors. We're teaching them truly how to be leaders and how to change the way companies operate.
But I could see a couple of things in there, though, because I'm imagining this person leaving a program like yours, or one where they end up with a bachelor's in sales from a university that offers a major in that. Then they go out there, and then all of a sudden they're sitting alongside with people who, you know, had to figure it out and fight their way through. Here's this, you know, college educated salesperson versus the natural born, like, this is what I do salesperson. And I could see that being potentially a rough interaction between, you know, someone who's seen as maybe just book smart on sales versus practically smart, right? Just on the surface.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really valid point. And where I would kind of challenge that is most of the sales programs that that I interact with and that I see through a lot of these national competitions that we go to that bring together kind of 60 or 80 sales programs, we're all doing the same thing, which is making our students act. We are not textbook teaching them. They're not book smart in the fact that they have passed a test or passed a quiz or gotten an A based on their rote memory. We are making them act. We are making them sell. If they don't sell, they will get an F, right? So they have to be able to perform to earn, you know, to earn the grade, right? That you might earn in a traditional academic sense by taking a test. So, and it's not only that. I think the other really important thing is we're teaching them about technology, right? We're teaching them Salesforce. We're teaching them how to use Sales Navigator. We're teaching them how to use Chorus. We're teaching them how to use these different technologies that are being used within sales organizations. So they're actually coming to the table so ready, and you know, not only in kind of a fake sense, but a practical sense. And the data says that graduates of sales programs are going to ramp up 50% faster and experience 30% less turnover than non-graduates of sales programs. And then also, we haven't even talked about the training piece, but training one salesperson can cost more than $180,000. That's based on data that we've collected through our data that the Sales Education Foundation has collected. And we're kind of eliminating that, right? We're doing all the training at the college level. So, you know, it's an incredibly good investment for a company to hire somebody that has graduated from a sales program, because we've done a lot of the work for them.
Yeah. And I love that well-rounded approach too, when you're talking about the technology, talking about the use of a CRM. Even if somebody goes to a company and it's not Salesforce, at least they're familiar with the CRM, the reason why it's there, the reason why as a professional you should care about your CRM, which is different than what you know, because you were in sales for quite some time before getting into this, which is how most salespeople feel about CRMs and technology. Not even just are they aware of it, but do they like it, or do they see it as something that gets in the way, right?
Sure, absolutely. And I should, because we are not tied to Salesforce in any way, shape, or form. So I do not want to signify that we partner with them.
Right.
We teach a class on CRM. And in that class, we explore many different types of CRM. So it's definitely not Salesforce focused specific. And I've worked for many companies that have used different CRM. So I do know it's important to have a well-rounded approach there.
Yeah. Well, and understand the fundamentals of it and the reason why, and then you can apply that anywhere you go. It's just about learning different fields and different things like that. But the rest of it is, you know, the fundamentals, right? It's like, once you know how to drive a car, you can get in any car and figure out the buttons and what things do enough to drive most of the time, unless you've never driven a manual before, then you're in trouble. But otherwise, you know, you should know what you're doing. And I really appreciate too that, you know, the goal of helping people, you know, use it and then be practical out there, you know, the mindset shift and really what's doing. Now, shifting a little bit in this conversation, because one of the things you mentioned is DE&I and those kind of focus and projects and, you know, different things you mentioned in passing. And then we've talked about it. Just so people know, we are both on the board of the Girls Who Sell Empowerment Fund, which is the nonprofit side of that. Both obviously strong supporters of that. And you, coming from a tech sales background, which is generally not very diverse, right? And people know that. The stats are all over the place. And what are you seeing as far as the program goes? What are you seeing as far as people who are realizing like sales is an option and not just something for men, right? Or not just something that for this kind of person, where it's like, okay, really anybody who wants to be successful in sales literally can.
Absolutely. And that is something that's really important. Really important to me personally, just as a woman in tech sales, right? So I spent a lot of my life being the only woman in the boardroom, right? Or the only woman on the team. And I was a sales engineer, so that even narrows the field a little bit more. But it's really important for me to empower other women now. And that's why I was, you know, interested in the Girls Who Sell Empowerment Fund. And I think Heidi is just a genius, who so passionate, and it's hard to not want to be a part of something that she's a part of, because her passion for, Girls Who Sell, it just exudes from her existence. But, you know, I think that women have, just this innate ability to sell. Right. And it's not anything that guys don't have, but it's something that is much more natural to women, I think. So the ability to actively listen, the ability to sell with empathy, right. The ability to kind of really be, an advisor, as you said, a guide. So, you know, when you are the guide to your prospect, right. I feel like that is it's a more natural role for a woman. And so we have these natural abilities to go out there and, you know, really just kind of crush it in the sales world. And there aren't as many women in the profession, and that's crazy. Right. So one of the things that we do, within the Sales Academy is we, outside of the kind of the academic part of Sales Academy education and just the fundamental learning and the competitions, we also hold workshops. So every term we offer about 6 to 8 different workshops, and students have to go through at least 6 of them to earn their certificate. And these workshops are run by our sponsors. We also have partner workshops that we'll kind of tack on. If let's say Girls Who Sell was doing an amazing workshop, we would give credit for that. And so I try really hard to have those workshops not only focus on sales related topics, but also focus on, these kind of important topics that we need to talk about, like women in sales and how to be a successful woman in sales, diversity, equity, inclusion in sales organizations, what that means, what that looks like. And so we have partnered with a lot of other organizations to provide these workshops to expose our students to all of these options that are out there and that have always been out there waiting for them. And I think now more than ever, sales organizations are seeing the value of DEI and how impactful it is to have a diverse team, right? And how impactful it is to have a diverse gender team as well. So there's no better time than now, I feel like, that for women to be in sales and for sales teams to really kind of embrace not only having a diverse team, but having a diverse culture within a sales organization.
Yeah. And obviously anyone who knows me knows that I support that completely as well. And I love what you're talking about, especially that evolution of just the diversity in general from your experience, especially in tech side, especially as a sales engineer, as being the only woman probably in the room, maybe on the floor, in the department, and then, you know, where it goes. And I think one of the biggest things is not just for checking a box and trying to be all inclusive and diverse just because it's important. I think one of the biggest lessons I've learned is that your customers are all different, mm-hmm. right? Which means if your customers are all different, then your sales team should reflect that, because they're going to be speaking to different people and connect with different people, right? And, you know, I think that's just so important that it should reflect, you know, the population and who your customers are.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, I was really lucky in my sales career, especially at Insight Software. I had, both of my direct bosses, direct reports were female. So I was really, really lucky to work for a company that really valued women-led teams. And honestly, it's interesting when I think back on that experience and I think about the teams that I was on, the fact that the team was run by women, you know, one of the things that you notice is women-led teams tend to be more gender diverse than men-led, male-led teams. And what I see with my students is that when I have females that are competing, you know, and especially a female team, when I look at kind of other teams out there in the sales competition world, their win rate is really high, right? Versus the male led teams. So I think that women just bring a different skill set to the world of sales that, as I mentioned, kind of emphasizes connection and collaboration. And it's really important for sales organizations to realize that, and not only, you know, attract women to sales jobs, but also retain them. So for companies, this really entails fostering an inclusive culture, right? And then providing those mentorship and promotion opportunities. So you have to kind of change the culture of your work environment, but it's important to not only kind of bring women on board, as I tell a lot of our sponsor companies, but you have to create a culture that makes them want to stay, right? And so there's a lot, you know, a lot that goes inside of that piece too. And that the biggest piece of that, I think, is offering opportunities for growth. So I think that the more companies can kind of promote, their leadership team, as a diverse leadership team, then when you go work for an organization like that, you're like, okay, that could be me. That person in the C-suite looks like me,
yeah.
Right? It's not like I can come in as a sales rep, but every single person in the C-suite is a white male. Mm-hmm. And so that I feel like is really where the shift needs to happen and the change needs to happen. And students, my students are seeing that. And we talk about that in class. You know, when you're interviewing with companies, let's look at the C-suite. Let's look at what they're, you know, how they're promoting from within. And we're starting to see a shift. I mean, many companies are really starting to see a shift.
Well, and I think the big key with that is this a part of the company culture with being, you know, inclusive and not just, again, checking a box of diversity or checking off a box and hiring people and then still having a culture, right? The culture that is not supportive of women or diversity in the sales organization, or is it just from the top down? It's just a part of like, we want the best. We want to support everybody. Everyone has a chance. Like mm-hmm. they can make the career whatever they want it to be. And then we have a track record for that, which mm-hmm. I think that's a big shift, right?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And again, I'm not knocking on any particular person or group of people, right? I do think it's important for companies to recognize that to bring on good talent, to bring on diverse talent, to bring on, and you know, and diverse in gender and in ethnicity, you need to show up with kind of that being your true value as well. And that really being something that the company projects.
Yeah. And in these conversations, especially on my podcast, interviewing other people when we're chatting about that, is the other parts, it's not just the ethnicity and the gender, but also the socioeconomic background, degrees, no degrees, you know, like age, because everyone's going to bring this different aspect and this different experience and this different value to the clients, right? And to the company. Sure. And I think that's, it's just all of that, right? Instead of, like you said, it's like white males and everyone is like this. It's like, okay, but who is that serving? And, mm-hmm. you know, what does that say, you know, about where you're going as an organization? So I love that topic. Obviously, I support that. And it is interesting. I won't go into detail on it, but I have seen that same thing about women in sales when they embrace being a sales professional and what that means, just totally creates so much success and generally over their coworkers. So it's always fun to see.
Yeah, absolutely.
One last part I'm just curious about. So you started in sales a mm-hmm. while ago, you had a career in tech sales, sales engineer, been with this program now. What is it, what kind of things come to mind or what are you seeing that you're teaching students now about sales or seeing as just trends in sales now versus when you started? And it sounds like, you know, if you had training or not, but just even the shift in sales and selling from then to now, like what kind of things are you seeing where you're teaching students? You're like, yeah, this wasn't a thing, this sales process or this understanding or this philosophy or, you know, this dialogue, what does that look like now?
Yeah, no, it was really different. I started in sales in the days of, I was definitely before LinkedIn. and I started in the days where you were given a book of business and you were told to pick up a phone and call people. And I had to make 150 calls a day, every day. It was more of a, I learned the numbers game way, right? Like there's a certain amount of calls that you will make that will connect with a certain number of people that will, you know, basically book a certain number of demos, which will close a certain number of deals. And that's how kind of I came into the SDR role with no formal training. So the biggest difference that I see now is the focus on emotional intelligence, right? So instead of just competing with each other over numbers and quotas, it's really the relationship-based selling process, that's what I teach, in my program. And I know a lot of other professors do as well. That's focused on kind of empathy, discovery, active listening, resilience, and kind of what I like to call, and if anybody follows kind of the Buddhist philosophy, is the beginner's mindset, right? So approaching each and every sales situation with the idea that, you know, it's really not about us and our entire goal is to build a relationship with our consumer. And so we are teaching this process of how do you do that, right? How do you build a relationship? Well, it starts with building trust. Right? How do you build trust? Well, you make it about them. And so when we go through the sales process and we kind of break it down in the different sections of the pre-approach and the approach and discovery and presentation and handling objections and closing. But within each one of those sections, there's so much that we talk about that revolves around emotional intelligence, right? That really revolves around, you know, as you say in your book, selling with kind of that authenticity, right? Instead of just reading from a script and pushing for the close. So I think that that's the biggest difference in the way I learned to sell was I felt like I needed to be really persuasive, right? I felt like I really needed to kind of be more pushy. And what I learned over the course of my career is really it's all about building the relationship. As you said, walking with your customer as their guide. And truly helping people. And I think when you can make that shift, that's when you become really good, right? And so that's what we're kind of teaching our students to do now is really focus on the client and the discovery and learning what their pain points are. And then if you can figure those out, then you're golden, right?
So do you think that's a result of your evolution from where you began and what you view the role of a salesperson is now, and a shift more from the sales side? And, or is it a requirement or desire from the potential customer side? Like, Is there anything that you attribute that change from then till now, the numbers game versus the empathy and relationship mode?
Oh, I mean, it's just lack of training, right? I had no formal sales training. So I'm sure maybe if I had read a single sales book before I got into sales, they probably would have told me that too. But I think, you know, as you said, when you start in a company and let's say you start in like a customer support role or you start in an IT role, and then you move into a sales role, a lot of times you don't receive that training either. You're just kind of thrown into the ring and told to perform, right? I think it's what you learn over the course of time is that you'll spin your wheels forever if you focus on the numbers game. You will work so much harder than you need to. And when you can really focus on being emotionally intelligent and leading with empathy, you realize that with empathy comes power, right? Being able to empathize with your customers, hear their struggles, relate to them, partner with them, create a better situation that allows for growth for them, then you really have the power as a salesperson, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's interesting because I think about it, it's like somebody was in an SDR role or in sales role. They played the numbers game. They graduated. Everyone else died off. Then they hired some new people and they taught them the numbers game. And it's just like perpetuates because the victor knows the numbers game and they don't think about all the people who didn't make it. And that evolution versus what you're talking about versus the kind of program that you've built and what you're doing to change that next generation, which I think is the key, which is let's teach people that there's another way, especially another way versus what is can be challenging and painful in sales, but then also the part that customers don't necessarily enjoy anymore or don't want to deal with.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, customers are getting smarter every day, right? So it's becoming harder to be in the SDR role or the cold calling role, right? So you really have to approach it from a human perspective. You have to be a human, right? Like it's so important because people are just so technologically savvy that they have the ability to block calls and, you know, to quick delete emails. So you really have to approach it in a way that's going to make someone feel like I need to look at this or this person actually cares. Right.
Yeah. So as people can tell, I absolutely love what you're doing. I love the direction of this in 158 schools and universities and moving this forward. For people who are listening to this or watching this, they want to find out more information about your program. I know there's a link that you gave me. I'm going to put it into the show notes, but where's an easy way for them to find out the program if they want to enroll? And then also what about people who want to get involved or either, you know, people who could help out in some way? I know that I've had the pleasure of being a guest lecturer there a couple of times, which is amazing to help shift the future, but also companies that might want to be a sponsorship role or be involved or whatever that looks like. How can people find out more or reach out to you?
Yeah, that's a great question. So because the link to our website is kind of long, I'm not going to go through the whole thing. I think the easiest way is to just Google Oregon State Sales Academy, and then it'll take you directly to our page. And of course, you can, if you would like to get involved, all of our sponsorship opportunities are directly on that page. So you can learn about the academy, learn about our competitions, learn about our different sponsorship opportunities. As you said, outside of being a sponsor, I am always looking for guest lecturers for my class. One of the biggest and most important things to me in a well-rounded sales education is for my students to hear from many different sales professionals in many different verticals. So I have a guest speaker series that I run once a week in my class. I bring in sales professionals like yourself to talk to my students. They love it. I would say that that's the best feedback I get from my class is, you know, oh my gosh, Jason was so great. Or I really loved this particular guest lecture. It was really impactful. So, you know, if there is anyone out there that is interested in guest lecturing, then please let me know. It's caitlin.gill@oregonstate.edu. You can also contact me through the Sales Academy website. So yes, the more people we can get involved in Sales Academy, the better. I feel like it just, it creates a better student experience. The more people we have involved.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Well, Kaitlyn, thank you for coming on the show. Thank you also for your part, right? Making that transition from sales into the education to help shape the future. I think that's amazing and exactly what's needed. So I appreciate that. And of course, I appreciate you coming on and sharing this and everything you're doing for the students. So thanks for coming on the podcast.
Absolutely. It was 100% my pleasure. And again, I have mutual respect and admiration for everything that you do and the way that you are really kind of changing the sales world through your leadership and your guest speaking and the consulting that you give to sales organizations. So you are a gem, Jason. I appreciate you.
Well, thanks, Kaitlyn. And that's it, everybody, for this episode. We'll catch you on the next Scalable Call Center Sales Podcast.
Did you get some inspirations of ways to help your call center sales team win bigger, stronger, and faster? Hope you are fired up to scale your sales operations. If you got value from this podcast, please go in and leave a rating and review. Also, make sure to forward this episode to anyone else you know in the call center space. We appreciate your support in growing the Scalable Call Center Sales Podcast family. And if you have any comments, ideas, or feedback, contact us at CutterConsultingGroup.com.